I'm Jane Poynter, and this is True Green. Dr. Thomas Hanson has a vision for clean power. It's big and it's bold. Dubbed the Hanson Plan in a January 2008 Scientific American article, it would completely replace fossil fuels and nuclear power generation across the country. For years, Dr. Hanson ran coal-fired power plants for Tucson Electric Power, now serving almost 400,000 customers in Arizona. Not having much to do because the plants ran themselves, he started researching how to transform TEP and the industry. In the early 90s, Dr. Hanson quit running the coal plants and is now TEP's Vice President of Environmental Services, Conservation, and Renewable Energy. Last week, I chatted with him about TEP's goals, the Hanson Plan, plug-in hybrids and the new smart grid demo projects, as well as his concerns about natural gas. He also reveals his pick for the best thin-film solar panels. They may be less efficient, but are becoming less expensive than the standard silicon-based photovoltaics, which he calls crystallines. Here is our conversation.
What are you and TEP doing? What are your goals with the umbrella of climate change looming over?
Actually, we started the concept of needing to look at the way that we were making energy and change it in about 1992. We recognized it was getting very difficult to site transmission lines. It was getting even more difficult to site coal-fired power plants. If you kind of look at the history of power generation in the western United States, it was almost all oil-based until about 1972, 73, when the oil embargo occurred and the prices went up a little bit. Everybody got scared. And at that point in time, most of the utilities started building coal-fired power plants and mothballing the oil power plants. With that in mind, we realized we had to start looking towards alternatives. So we looked at wind. We looked at biomass. There's not a whole lot of biomass in Arizona. We looked at hydro. Hydro, there's not a whole lot of in Arizona either. And what's left? Solar. I mean, solar is, as you look at Arizona, it's the obvious natural resource in the long term. So we developed two strategies, and this was 94. The first part of it was to start looking towards how to develop utility scale solar. How can you drive the cost of the solar down? How can you make it look like a coal-fired power plant? The sun only shines during the day. The coal plant has to be able to run 24/7. So energy storage is the next component that's needed. But the first, the chicken or the egg, if you will, the first aspect was we had to drive the cost of solar down. And our target was always $2 a watt installed cost for photovoltaic. Efficiency wasn't necessarily an issue. We have lots of land. Arizona has 114,000 square miles of land. And as we look at our needs, if all of TEP's electricity were to come from solar, we need about 60 square miles of land. Very small amount in the overall picture of things. We could eventually get to the point where all of our electricity comes from solar.
Eventually. What's your pull out of the air timeline for that?
Well, you know, I like to say that by the year 2100, our grandchildren will look back and wonder, what was all the fuss about? What were they arguing about? But the fact remains, it's a very expensive technology at this point in time. So it's going to require a transition. I went to a forum last night offered by Congresswoman Giffords, and one of the questions came up, when does it get to the point where storage, when do the intermittencies of solar become a problem for reliability of the grid? And it's about 300 megawatt level. And as I didn't say the number before, but 60 square miles of solar would be about 6,100 megawatts worth of solar. So to get 5% of our energy would need 300 megawatts of solar.
And where are we at now?
We're at about 7. So we're still have a long
seven
way
megawatts
to grow into it. 7 megawatts, yes.
And I'm assuming you have goals set out like by XYZ year, we want to have X megawatts. Do you have those kinds of goals?
Actually, the goal is a little different. The goal is to drive the cost down. That's our goal. Our first 5-megawatt facility up at Springerville, we demonstrated we could get the system cost below $1 a watt. You add that to a $1 a watt module, which is the target for the thin films, and you're at that $2 a watt target that I talked about earlier.
So you're there?
Well, we're not quite there yet because the modules are still more than $1 a watt.
Uh-huh.
But we believe that like the Global Solars of the world, the First Solars, they have the capability to drive that down to a dollar a watt, but they need a market. I need a market that's bigger than just a TEP also. And Germany, I give Germany a lot of credit. They're providing a lot of that market right now.
What about the shortages of silicon? Is that still an issue?
It right now is still an issue. But again, with the thin film technologies, which don't use any silicon, we believe very strongly that thin films are the right solution. Crystalline is part of the solution, don't get me wrong. Crystalline has a higher efficiency, so it's more appropriate for rooftops where you have a limited amount of area. But when you're talking utility scale, where you have oogles of area, so to speak, efficiency is not the driver, it's cost per kilowatt hour.
And what are the thin films that you're looking at with the most salivation?
The right solution in the long term was effectively a high-tech paint roller. And you take your piece of glass and you run your high-tech paint roller across it. You sandwich another piece of glass on top with a sealant to keep the water out, and that becomes your module. And NanoSolar's process is probably as close to that concept as any, and that's how we'll get that cost down to a dollar a watt.
Once you've done the miraculous and you've got solar down to a cost that actually is viable for electric utility like TEP, then what?
Then we move into mode two, I guess. We work towards that 300 megawatts that I said becomes our limit before storage is needed. We will probably hit that goal someplace around the year 2015 to 2020, which tells me that we then have to have this economic, reliable, efficient energy storage in place by that period of time.
Is that viable? Do you think we will?
It's a concept using solar in the Southwest, a high voltage DC backbone across the United States, and compressed air energy storage located across that high voltage backbone. Wind power from the north, the middle northwest, hydropower or tidal power can come from either of the two coasts. Florida, of course, has the Gulf Stream, and they're looking at not tide power, current power, if you will. So all of these renewable energy sources feeding into this one high voltage backbone, and the storage then becomes the means by which you control the flows on the high voltage backbone. It's a kind of a pie in the high sky concept, except that photovoltaics exist. Wind exists, current power is starting to exist, there are some tidal power installations being made off of California as we speak, and compressed air energy storage does exist. There's a plant in Alabama, it's been in service since 92 or 93, and another one in Germany that's been in service a little bit longer than that. There's one going in Iowa as we speak for a wind farm, because they realize, you know, the wind doesn't blow all the time, so you have to store the energy. If we were to have the same amount of volume underground to store compressed air as exists right now in the United States for storing natural gas, that would give us all the storage capacity we need for all of the electricity that was consumed in the year 2005. So
it's totally viable.
Technically viable. The next issue is economics.
And has somebody done a back-of-the-envelope calculation?
The next paper coming out has the back-of-the-envelope calculation. Actually, it's a pretty precise calculation, and it would require billions of dollars. But if you look at what it would take for us to build more nuclear and coal-fired power plants and fuel them for the next 50 or 60 years and dispose of their wastes, it actually ends up being a smaller number than that cost from the, quote, conventional technologies.
Looking at EPRI and the NRDC's PRISM document, where they went out and they did a very, what they even say is a pretty optimistic look at all the technological ways that the electric power industry can adapt to the current energy and climate change challenges, you can only get back down to 1990 levels by 2030, which is, gives a little cause for pause, given the fact that we're supposed to be getting down to about 80% mm-hmm. of current usage by 2050.
Right.
So how does that all pan out in your mind?
In my mind, it goes back to the energy storage concept. We as electric utilities, we provide two services. You as the customer, you see energy. You turn the light switch on, your light works, and you know that your electric bill is increasing as your meter turns faster. What you don't see is the capacity so that when you do turn that light switch on, we are able to send those electrons through the wire to get to you. In the past, capacity and energy have all been provided by the same source. In the longer term, I think the utility industry has to break that paradigm and realize that energy comes from one source, in my mind, solar, at least in the Southwest, and capacity comes from another source, the storage. And so the concept then being you run the energy When the sun is shining, you take all the power that you can possibly get and you put it into the storage. And then at nighttime, you use that storage to be able to provide load back to the customers. Nuclear is the same type of thing like coal, that you have capacity and energy in the same generator. You can't separate them. I think we're going to have to change the paradigm so that we have energy sources and storage sources.
But how are we going to get there quick enough?
That's a good question. It's going to become a matter of political will.
How do you mean?
How much money are we willing to spend up front, and how fast are we willing to spend it? How much of an increase are we willing to accept on our electric rates? It's a matter of political will. Where are we willing to put our priorities? If you've taken a look at the most recent proposal of the next year's fiscal budget at the federal level, we're not allocating any additional money to renewables. They haven't cut it, which was nice to see, but there's no additional funding. We put off the extension of the investment tax credits on solar now 3 times. But that's absolutely essential for the industry.
So there's both the incentives and the R&D monies to continue developing these technologies to where they're viable for you.
Exactly. The nice part is we have hit the point where the R&D has produced results that are getting us to the cost points that we need to have by 2015 to really let this thing take off on the solar side. What we need now is that same level of research funding on the storage side. It's going to take some political will to go find the locations and map out where do you want to have the high voltage transmission line. The nation undertook this type of a process back in the 1950s when they decided and made a commitment to build the interstate system. Basically, what we're asking for is a similar type of interstate system for electricity.
Are there plans for TEP to do any kind of test with this compressed air?
We have talked about it. We, at this point in time, have not made a commitment. We are looking for sites, and we know a couple of decent places where we could punch holes in the ground and be able to store a fair amount of compressed air.
How does this work?
Remember I mentioned earlier we need about 6,100 megawatts worth of solar to meet TEP's needs on an annual basis. In the springtime, our loads are only about 700 to 800 megawatts. And if you've got 6,000 megawatts of solar capacity on a spring day, it's going to produce about 5,000 megawatts of power. So that extra 4,200 megawatts needs to go someplace. So what you do is you run a big electric motor that drives a big air compressor, and you compress the air and you store it underground. Then at night, you let that compressed air come back out again through a turbine, and it spins a generator.
How unbelievably simple sounding.
That's exactly it. The technology exists. Decompress air, remember it gets colder, and in the summertime, which is when you're releasing all of this air, that cooling could be used for cooling homes.
I love those kinds of synergetic projects. I mean, that's the way things should be designed as far as possible, don't you think?
Uh-huh. And for an extra 10% of the electric energy, we can convert all of the passenger vehicles in Tucson to be electric instead of gasoline. That's all it takes. It's just another 10% of the electricity. So then you get rid of all the transportation, or about 90% of the transportation greenhouse gases. Still have to figure out a solution for the heavy passenger, the heavy trucks. They'll have to find a solution for the airplanes. Now that's where biodiesel and those other biomass materials can come in and be very effective. And what was it? There was a paper just the other day that said that ethanol production or methanol production was an energy negative. It was actually taking more energy than you were getting back out of it. Yeah, that may be true, it may not be true, but the point is that it uses a lot of land. If you don't have to have 100% of your transportation needs coming from biomass, and you can reduce it to 10%, we have saved a lot of land and water.
Do you think the citizens of Tucson and elsewhere in the U.S. have a responsibility to energy efficiency, given the current situation with climate change and the energy issues that we have in this country?
Well, I think we all have a responsibility, but by the same token, people respond to price signals. That's just natural.
And what about tax incentives or things like that?
The tax incentives are absolutely essential, both for homeowners and for the utilities, as well as corporations. We need everybody to do some part of it. The Corporation Commission was very wise in implementing a portfolio standard that requires some level of distributed generation. The customers have a responsibility. You know, it's going to be a partnership as we go down the road. It's not the old paradigm where you make power in one central location and you have power lines radiating out from it to take electricity in one direction to the customers. the cost of electricity, the cost of our natural resources is too high any longer to use that paradigm. We all have to share in it.
So when you say distributed resources, you're talking about photovoltaics on homes, on businesses?
Even if all of the homes in TP's service territory were to be covered with solar panels, it produces maybe 10 to 15% of our annual electricity. So we have to have a combination of rooftop systems as well as ground-mounted utility-scale systems. And, of course, energy storage. I continue to make a plug for energy storage. It's absolutely essential.
Do you think TEP will be forced to build any more coal-fired power plants?
I hope not. We don't need another coal plant. We don't need another base load plant until approximately the year 2017.
And so you're hoping that solar will come in just in time to take over that excess need?
Solar can take up the energy side of it, but in order to prevent putting that coal plant on the ground, we have to have the energy stored. That is the solution. If people don't want to see another coal plant or nuclear plant put on the ground, energy storage is the option to prevent that from happening.
And what about peak usage? Is some of that demand for your coal-powered plant in, or your extra plant in 2017 based on peak?
Very little.
So where do you get peak?
Gas turbines. That's one of my fears. I mean, you look back in history, and apparently we don't learn too well from it. We had domestic production of oil, and we were one of the world's leaders up until, 1940s, 1950s. And then we continued to use a lot of oil, and we started importing oil from then until about the 70s. And then suddenly we couldn't get all of the oil we needed from overseas, and we realized, hey, we need to do something different. Natural gas, up until probably 2000, we were using domestic resources. Since 2000, 2001, we've become an importer, primarily from Canada, but now we're starting to import from countries that are less stable, might we say, than the Middle East. We're putting ourselves with natural gas in the same position that we were with oil 40 years ago. We haven't learned a thing.
Is there a short-term solution?
The short-term solution, I hate to say it, is more coal. The longer-term solution becomes the energy storage. Compressed air energy storage is very good for shifting from one season to another. Just like we store natural gas now for use in the winter, and you build up your reserves for 9 months and then you use them up in 3 months, it's kind of the same thing. We see that we produce most of the solar energy in Tucson is produced in the springtime. And of course, most of the consumption is in the summertime. So we need to shift that 3 months worth of production into the summer for use. What surprised me when I ran the numbers, and I used 2005 data for this one, was we just need 10% of our energy used on an annual basis needs to be stored. So it's the amount of storage is actually fairly small compared to our total consumption.
Well, you still have the day-night cycle problem.
And that's the other part of the storage. Maybe we try to use the plug-in hybrid vehicles. If they plug themselves in first thing in the morning when they get to work, then we've got all that morning sun to recharge those batteries. So then in the afternoon, when the clouds start coming in the summer, we start taking some of that power out of it that we stored. We could use compressed air energy storage, but it would be much more efficient to use the plug-in hybrid electric vehicles.
Smart grid.
Smart grid, exactly.
Has a demonstration of this been done anywhere yet?
Southern California Edison is doing a demo. PG&E invited us to a demo recently. We didn't have the time to be able to go. But the California utilities are starting to get into this in a much more detailed manner.
That'd be so cool to see.
It is fascinating.
When will we be able to go out there to actually see something?
Anytime. Both of them have vehicles that are up and running.
Okay.
They have at least the components that are needed for the smart grid that are available. And they're using these vehicles on a daily basis now.
That's so cool. Are you hopeful that we're going to be able to make all these changes in time before
I'm more than hopeful. I'm totally convinced that we can make these changes in time.
Based on what?
Based on knowing that the photovoltaic technologies are on the timeline that I had predicted and expected back in 1992 when I started all of this. Knowing that compressed air energy storage is now finally getting attention, that it's a technology that exists, that works, and that can meet the capacity needs of the utility industry. Knowing that we can control solar in a manner to make it look like real generation, if you will, traditional dispatchable generation, and knowing that the components of the smart grid are being developed and work, that's the other part, that they work, and also knowing that the federal government is finally starting to pay some attention to the whole issue.
Yeah, have a gigantic mountain to climb, though, before this magic year 2050.
But, you know, you go back and think about it. I remember, what was it, 1959 Sputnik was launched, and we put a man on the moon 10 years later. Now think about that. The rocket that put Sputnik into orbit was like a firecracker compared to an Apollo launch module. What we did in a 10-year period of time was phenomenal. And if we can just marshal our resources to do the same thing, to build another interstate system for electric transportation, we will get there.
Dr. Hansen, thank you very much.
My pleasure, thank you.
This has been an episode of True Green with Jane Poynter. For information on this and other episodes, go to www.janepoynter.com.